This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
In today's program, you can hear our feature, Culture and Society and News for Young People. First, however, our bulletin of church news, followed by Africa News Panorama. I am Festus Tarawali. Pope Francis slept well overnight and continues to rest on Thursday morning as his condition has shown a slight improvement over the past couple of days. In its brief morning update on Thursday, the Holy See Press Office said the Pope slept well during the night and is now resting. Another brief statement from the press office said a Jubilee audience with the Pope scheduled for Saturday the 1st of March has been cancelled. The press office publishes a longer statement on the Pope's condition every evening. In Wednesday evening statement, it said the Pope's health condition had slightly improved over the previous 24 hours. The mild kidney insufficiency observed in recent days has subsided, read the statement. A chest CT scan carried out on Tuesday night showed a normal progression of the lung inflammation. Blood tests conducted on Wednesday confirmed the improvement seen on Tuesday, the statement noted. It added that the Pope remains on high-flow oxygen therapy, but as of Wednesday evening, he had not experienced any asthma-like respiratory crisis. His prognosis was still guarded, the statement concluded. The Pope was admitted to Rome's Gemelli Hospital on Friday the 14th of February following a bout of bronchitis, with his doctors later diagnosing bilateral pneumonia. Pope Francis has set up a commission to encourage contributions from the faithful, bishops' conferences, and other potential benefactors. The new Commission on Donations for the Holy See, or Commissio de Donationibus Pro Sancta Sede, announced by the Vatican on Wednesday, was created with a document he signed on the 11th of February, days before his hospitalization. The main task of the commission is to run fundraising campaigns among the faithful, bishops' conferences, and other potential benefactors, highlighting the importance of financial support for the mission and charitable work of the Holy See. The commission will also seek fundraising from willing donors for specific projects proposed by institutions of the Roman Curia and the Governorate of Vatican City. At the same time, it will respect the independence and responsibilities of each entity of the Roman Curia in accordance with existing regulations. As part of its work, the Commission will act as a coordinating body for other fundraising initiatives, both formal and informal, such as contributions made under Canon 1271 and Peter's Pens. It will do so while ensuring that the purpose and character of each initiative are respected. The Commission currently consists of 5 members and is chaired by Monsignor Roberto Campisi, Assessor for General Affairs of the Secretariat of State. The Vatican Secretary for Relations with States and International Organizations, Archbishop Paul Richard Gallagher, has expressed the Holy See's deep concern over the existential threat posed by nuclear weapons. Archbishop Gallagher made remarks in his address at the ongoing high-level segment of the UN's 2025 session of the Conference on Disarmament in Geneva. Deborah Castellano-Lubov reports.
Immense military expenditures that often go far beyond what is necessary to ensure legitimate defense foment the vicious circle of an exhausting arms race that, a Vatican official emphatically warns, diverts vital resources away from poverty eradication, justice, education, and health care. Archbishop Paul Richard Gallagher, the Vatican's Secretary for Relations with States and International Organizations, was the one to stress this in his February 26th statement to the UN's high-level segment of the 2025 session of the Conference on Disarmament taking place in Geneva. Offering the participants the Pope's cordial greetings, he said, "Today we stand at a turning point. Together as a family of nations," he encouraged, "we can take just and courageous actions for a general, balanced, and complete disarmament under international control. For otherwise," he warned, "the alternative is the perpetuation of conflicts, violence, increasing inequalities, and environmental degradation, which ultimately benefits no one but the arms lobby." Regrettably, Archbishop Gallagher said, "The Conference on Disarmament has been held hostage to a stalemate that has continued year after year without the adoption of a proper negotiating mandate. The reason for this body," he reminded, "is to negotiate multilateral disarmament instruments and to deliver concrete results." Massive and competitive arms accumulation, he noted, seemed to contradict the provisions of the Charter of the United Nations, in which states resolve to take effective collective measures for the prevention and removal of threats to peace. As Archbishop Gallagher unsparingly decried the perils of nuclear arms usage and accumulation and the weaponization of artificial intelligence, he renewed the Holy See's appeal, encouraging the conference to adopt a renewed sense of urgency and commitment to reach concrete and lasting agreements for the sake of the common good before it may be too late. I'm Deborah Castellano-Lubov.
The Xaverian Missionaries, founded by Saint Guido Maria Conforti, are commemorating 75 years since their arrival in Sierra Leone with a series of events in the Diocese of Makeni. As part of the Jubilee activities, a storytelling vigil was scheduled to take place on Thursday, the 27th of February at 8 p.m. at Saint Conforti Church in Makeni City. This special evening will honor the legacy of the Xaverian Missionaries with personal stories and reflections from those who knew them. On Friday, the 28th February at 5 p.m., the Bishop of Makeni Diocese, Most Reverend Bob John Koroma, will preside over Holy Mass at St. Conforti Church to officially inaugurate the 75th anniversary celebrations. The Xaverian Mission in Makeni began with Fathers Augustus Fermo Azzolini, Pietro Serafino Calza, Camillo Olivani and Attilio Stefani, who landed in Freetown on the 8th of July 1950. The four were assigned to the Prefecture Apostolic of Makeni, which was created on the 3rd of April 1952. Father Augusto Azzolini was appointed its first prefect. A decade later, on the 24th of February 1962, Makeni was elevated to a diocese and Father Azzolini became its first bishop. He was consecrated on the 24th of June 1962 and served until his retirement in November 1986. The Apostolic Nuncio to Liberia, Sierra Leone and the Gambia, Archbishop Walter Erby, has urged priests in Liberia to keep alive the deep memory of their vocation. He made these remarks during the recently concluded three-day gathering of the National Priests Association of Liberia at St. Paul's College Seminary in Gwanga. Addressing the priests over the weekend, Archbishop Erby encouraged them to reflect on the transformative moment when God's grace touched their lives. "The day each of you said yes, a yes rooted in gratitude for all the goodness that the Lord has done for us," he said. He further emphasized that priests are anointed to bring anointing to others. Archbishop Erby expressed appreciation for the strong bonds of fraternity and unity among the priests, urging them to continue supporting one another, especially in times of difficulty. On their part, the priests reaffirmed their commitment to praying for the health and well-being of Pope Francis, asking for God's blessings and protection as he leads the Universal Church. They also recommitted themselves to working closely with their local ordinaries in providing pastoral care to their parishes and communities in accordance with the Code of Canon Law. You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa said on Thursday that he wanted to do a deal with United States President Donald Trump in order to resolve a dispute over his country's land policy and genocide case against Israel at the World Court. Trump cut United States financial assistance to South Africa in an executive order this month, citing disapproval of its approach to land reform and the International Court of Justice case against Washington's close ally. Ramaphosa told a conference organized by United States bank Goldman Sachs in Johannesburg that he wanted the dust to settle after the executive order, but that the longer-term goal was to go to Washington to mend relations. Ramaphosa did not say what the deal could involve, only that it could touch on trade, diplomatic and political matters. Ethiopia's Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed arrived in Somalia's capital Mogadishu on Thursday to hold discussions with President Hassan Sheikh Mohamud, Somalia's presidency said, following a thaw in icy relations. The relationship soured in January 2024 when Ethiopia announced plans to lease a stretch of coastline in Somalia's breakaway Somaliland region. Ethiopia planned to build a naval base and commercial port in exchange for possible recognition of Somaliland's independence. Somalia accused Ethiopia of undermining its territorial integrity, threatened to eject its peacekeepers, and strengthened ties with Ethiopia's arch foes, Egypt and Eritrea. The two countries agreed to resolve the dispute at talks mediated by Ankara in December, pledging to find commercial arrangements to allow landlocked Ethiopia reliable, secure, and sustainable access to and from the sea. They also agreed to begin technical negotiations by the end of February. Abiy's trip comes a month after Mohamud visited Addis Ababa. French prosecutors have closed a case filed by Democratic Republic of Congo accusing Apple of using conflict minerals in its supply chain, Reuters reported on Thursday. Congo filed criminal complaints against Apple subsidiaries in France and Belgium, its lawyers said in December. Apple said then it strongly disputed the allegations and had told its suppliers they must not use the minerals in question sourced from Congo or Rwanda. According to Reuters, in the document dated February 18, the Paris prosecutor's office said allegations of money laundering and deceptive business practices were not sufficiently well-founded and closed the case, meaning it will not proceed with a complaint. Meantime, India said on Thursday that it is exploring mining of critical minerals in Zambia, Congo, and Australia. According to the country's mines secretary, V.L. Kanta Rao, the revelation comes as the world's fastest-growing major economy aims to secure raw materials such as lithium and reduce its reliance on imports of minerals such as lithium, key to energy transition technologies. India is still in the process of developing lithium processing technology, a sector predominantly led by China. The Zambian government has recently agreed to give 9,000 square kilometers to India for exploration of cobalt and copper, Rao said in a media conference, adding that India is also looking at Congo and Tanzania for mining critical minerals. You are tuned to the Daily Africa Service of Vatican Radio. This is Culture and Society, and you are welcome to the program. My name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. The Catholic Church celebrates a jubilee year every 25 years. The reigning pope convokes this important milestone in the life of the church, a practice that dates back to 1300. For the Catholic Church, the jubilee year is a year of remission of sins, reconciliation, conversion, and sacramental penance. It is also called a holy year and is the period during which the Pope grants plenary indulgence to the faithful who travel to Rome and perform particular religious practices such as passing through the holy door, confessing, receiving communion, praying, and performing a work of piety, mercy, and penance. The 2025 Jubilee is centered on the theme Pilgrims of Hope. As the Holy Father Pope Francis so beautifully expressed it, every Catholic is called upon to fan the flame of hope that has been given us and help everyone to gain new strength and certainty by looking to the future with an open spirit, a trusting heart, and far-sighted vision. The Jubilee celebrations began on Christmas Eve on 24th December 2024 with Pope Francis knocking on the holy door of St. Peter's Basilica in the Vatican. One of the major highlights of this year's Jubilee is the celebration of the Jubilee of Artists and the World of Culture, which was held between 15th and 18th February. The occasion attracted experts from prestigious artistic centers and institutions of learning who sat together to explore new languages and strategies for the valorization of religious and artistic heritage. It was a rich program of events that celebrated the profound connection between art and spirituality. Among the participants was Claudio Mario Betti, the director of the Rome campus of the Australian Catholic University. On the sidelines of that busy event, Betty spoke to Vatican Radio, emphasizing how important it is today to understand that culture is at the root of the transmission of the Catholic faith. He also explained to Vatican Radio's Thaddeus Jones how we can transmit the faith that we are living through our own cultures.
We were a bit sorry because we were not able to meet the Pope, but of course he is sick. However, I think it's a crucial element in the overall experience of the Jubilee to be able to celebrate the Jubilee of culture. It was quite an impressive moment, and the liturgy yesterday was very important, and the homily that the Pope gave is a crucial moment in understanding the role of culture within the Catholic Church today.
What do you think is particularly relevant and important when we're looking at culture and we're celebrating it with the Jubilee being the occasion for that, even from your own work and your own experience?
Extremely important. I think that we need to understand that culture is at the root of transmission of the Catholic faith. It is crucial for us to understand how we can transmit the faith that we are living. And culture is the way through which we transmit the faith we are living. We need to redefine what culture is, and we need to do it without fear of facing a world that is rapidly changing. We need to understand that the world, and that's part of what the Pope said yesterday, the world needs creators of culture. And he needs creation of culture. And the Pope said creator of culture, but it was Catholic culture probably, but also creator of cultures. We are living in a world that is deculturized. I'm not sure that I'm using the right word. And that means that people think that they are the beginning of history and the end of history. And this is exactly what the Church cannot be. The Church lives within history and can only exist within history. And that's why I think that the culture needs to be the brick on which we build our presence in the world.
How do you think we can do that today, as you were mentioning, in this very turbulent time where culture is almost disappearing? And we talk about AI, we talk about polarization in society and inability to perhaps dialogue and listen to one another. How do we keep culture alive in today's day and age?
Well, first of all, I think we need to reflect on what is happening in our world. I don't think we have all the elements to understand the world in which we're living at its full. I am the director of a campus here, and I meet 2,000 students every year. They're young people. And I find that this problem of culture is a problem that hits hard on young generation. It all takes away from this young generation the ability to react to the world in the sense that it takes away the weapons that they could have in order to face the difficulties of the world. It leaves them scared because they have no history. They have no past. And of course, people who have no past cannot have future. I think that this is something that we need to understand. As Catholics, we need to understand that we need to rebuild culture that knows where we are coming from, but at the same time has no fear to where we are going. And this is, I think, crucial in today's understanding of our faith.
And lastly, in terms of being artisans of hope, that was the theme. It's obviously the theme of the Jubilee as well, hope. Do you see hope in this area of trying to keep culture alive apart from promote it, strengthen it, and rebuild it?
the real problem today is that we may be tempted to become pessimists. In front of the difficulties we are facing, as Catholics, but as ordinary people as well, but think about it as a person within the Catholic Church, we see so much happening and so difficult to understand, so tragic. Think about wars. Think about the growth of poverty. Think about the growth of injustice and conflicts of all kinds. I think that we have the temptation of becoming pessimists. But pessimism becomes atheism, because we, at the end, we end up thinking that nothing can be done. I think that the Jubilee of Hope is a moment in which we are told that pessimism and that nothing is forever, and that pessimism is not a good counsel. And we are told that hope does not disappoint. And this is the main message of this Jubilee. And let's begin to see the light at the end of the tunnel. Let me go ahead on this. There used to be a theologian, a very important theologian who died in Russia, in the Soviet Union, Pavel Florensky. He used to say, we're living in a time like in a rapid of history, that we cannot navigate this rapid of history without optimism and hope for the future. We cannot navigate that unless, if we try to navigate it with the stubbornness of our pessimism, our boat will be submerged. We need to understand that behind the rapids of history that we are facing and every generation faces, I think that we're facing one which is rather hard and heavy today. We need to be able to see a quiet river that leads us to a different future.
Would you like to add anything?
The point on the meeting of yesterday was, the world needs the creators of culture. I think that any one of us can be a creator of culture. I think that we need to try to understand what creation of culture means. It does not mean that we all have to be artists or painters or whatever, but we need to recreate a culture of the we. I think that this is the most important thing that this Jubilee tells us, that the church is a we, and it's not agglomeration of many eyes. So I think that this is the main message that the Pope sends. We need to go back and to rebuild the we after having drowned in a world of I.
Director of the Rome campus of the Australian Catholic University, Claudio Mario Betti, speaking in a special interview with Vatican Radio's Thaddeus Jones on the sidelines of the Jubilee of Arts and the World of Culture, which was held between 15th and 18th February 2025 here in Rome. And that is all we have time for today in this edition of Culture and Society. Until next week at the same time, my name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba.
And now, news for young people.
Hello and welcome to the program. I am Festus Tarawali. As we have been reporting in this future over the past weeks, the first ever World Leaders Summit on Children's Rights was held in the Vatican on the 3rd of February under the theme, Love Them and Protect Them. In his opening address at the meeting, Pope Francis urged world leaders to listen to children suffering from war, poverty and migration. He also drew attention to his concern that young people, themselves a sign of hope, are struggling to find hope in today's world. Seven panels were held during the day-long summit, each with a specific topic focusing on the rights of children, including access to education, rights to a family, protection from violence, and access to resources. Let us listen to Bishop Paul Tai, Secretary of the Section of Culture of the Dicastery for Culture and Education, introducing the panel on children's right to education.
In a sense, the right to education goes to the heart of our commitment to promote the full dignity and worth of a child. Those of us who have been privileged enough to work as teachers know something about the transformation that happens in education. It's a grace, it's a privilege to see young people come alive, young people achieve their own potential. And in a sense, education always seeks ultimately to draw out from the child his or her innate capacities, gifts and imagination. This is essential because it allows the child to achieve his or her own fully personal potential, the potential to achieve human agency. to take responsibility, to achieve a certain economic autonomy, to shape his or her future with freedom and wisdom, to live in ways that are healthier and that seek to promote well-being. These are the achievements of education for the individual, but these are achievements also that contribute to the well-being of human society. The child who achieves his or her potential becomes a person who contributes to the common good of our world, to his or her family, to a local community, to a nation, and to a global community. We see associated with education economic and social progress. We know that the educated become better citizens who make informed choices, who can promote democracy, and who can establish equitable systems of justice. We know also that good education is associated with good healthcare outcomes. It's not necessarily that we have to balance. Investing in good education will itself bring healthier outcomes for our society. And also we know that good education is associated with peace and stability. People learn to see and to understand others as different. They grow in tolerance and they grow in solidarity. That's why, for many reasons, education and the establishment of schools and universities has been a priority for the Catholic community for so long. It's one of the ways in which we express God's love for people by offering them a good education, offering that education to all. But we recognise also that the achievement of good education is something that requires a broader coalition. Pope Francis in 2019 established a global compact on education, inviting together all those people from different sectors, from institutions, from different activities, who have a part to play in ensuring that we have a seamless offer to young people that promotes their well-being, that promotes their better education.
Bishop Paul Tai, Secretary of the Section of Culture of the Dicastery for Culture and Education, speaking at a recently held World Leaders Summit on Children's Rights in the Vatican. And that's all for this edition of News for Young People. Till the same time next week, I am Festus Tarawali. You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio. In our next program at the same time tomorrow, you can hear our feature, Development and the Economy, and a reflection by Father Enobong Udiadiong. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.